Hi, and welcome to Guideposts. I'm your volunteer reader, Sandy Summers. Today, we continue reading the April-May 2026 issue of Guideposts magazine with articles like, What Inspires Me? Someone Cares, Pass It On, Mother's Day Surprise. The doorbell rang, but I waited a moment to answer. It was Mother's Day, and I already knew who was at the door, my daughter, Julie. By the time I stepped outside, she was gone. I picked up the bunch of dandelions lying on the porch. Such beautiful flowers, I said. Whoever could have left them? I looked around, pretending not to see the pink dress peeking out from the corner of the house or hear Julie's giggles. She loved thinking she surprised me again. That memory from the 1980s when Julie was little is one of my favorites. The mother-daughter ritual goes back to my own childhood. One Mother's Day, I picked some dandelions and left them on the porch. Then I rang the doorbell and hid in the bushes as I waited for my mom to find her gift. I'll never forget the surprised look on her face and the excited way she clapped her hands. I loved delighting her so much. I continued the tradition into adulthood with wild roses or other flowers. Every Mother's Day, I left a bouquet on Mom's porch, rang the bell, and ran away. And every year, until she died at age 98, she pretended to be surprised. Julie still leaves flowers on my porch for Mother's Day, and I still pretend to be surprised. Mom isn't with us anymore, but our lovely tradition lives on. Karen Kletzing, Charleston, West Virginia. A Tasty Texas Hello. Working at a summer camp in Texas is not for the faint of heart. It was my fifth week on the job, and the temperature was soaring. I'd been drinking tons of water, but I had a craving for soda, which wasn't readily available at camp. Then out of nowhere, a volunteer named Callie gave me an ice-cold bottle of Coke Zero. My favorite, I said. How did you know? Callie grinned. She told me that she'd asked around to find out what each person's favorite drink was, then picked up some on her way to camp. This is how I like to show someone I'm thinking of them, she said. It's my Texas hello. Callie does the same for her coworkers and folks at her church. She has fun stealthily researching the favorite drinks and snacks of the people around her so she can surprise them later. I savored every drop of that cold Coke Zero. It was a sweet reminder that small, thoughtful gestures can make a huge difference. I've adopted Callie's habit of the Texas hello, and I've seen the smiles it can bring. Wendy Owens, Glen Rose, Texas. Creative reuse. When a friend began scrapbooking, it looked like fun. I rushed out to buy cardstock, glue, stencils, pens, and scissors for myself. Still, it didn't take long before I realized scrapbooking wasn't for me. I agonized over what to do with all the pricey materials I'd never use. A Facebook post from the Herbert Public Library in Port Neches, Texas, offered me an answer. In the spring, the library hosts a craft supply rescue, led by librarian Chelsea Moore. People donate gently used craft items that need a new home. On the day of the event, eager crafters head to the library to peruse such diverse materials as pattern, fabric, embroidery thread, crochet hooks, knitting needles, yarn, paints, brushes, as well as kits for making jewelry, candles, and soap. And yes, scrapbooking items. Crafters take whatever they will use, with no money exchanged. It's like going to a free garage sale. Donors get to see someone else enjoying their no longer needed craft items, and recipients are thrilled with their acquisitions. It made me happy to imagine someone scrapbooking with my supplies, passing on my blessing to others, and keeping those items out of landfills. Felt like a win all around. I couldn't wait to attend the event. Scrapbooking might not have been my cup of tea, but soap making sounded intriguing. Pat Butler Dyson, Beaumont, Texas. Have your own story of kindness and caring to tell? Email us at sc@guideposts.org. Cover story, What Inspires Me? Tom Lamas, the proud son of Cuban immigrants, shares his journey from news intern to the anchor of the NBC Nightly News. By Tom Lamas, New York, New York. My wife Jen and I were expecting our first child in 2013. Every reporter, every producer, every camera operator I worked with told me, Tom, you're going to see the world in a different way now. I was 33 and thought I understood quite a bit about the world, and it wasn't just because I'd been working in newsrooms since the age of 15 when I was an intern at the local Telemundo station. I'd grown up in a tight-knit Cuban-American family in Miami. My parents were immigrants, and they wanted my younger brother and me to understand what was going on back in Cuba and around the world. The news was always on our TV. We watched broadcasts in English and Spanish. I'd wake up in the morning to Café Cubano, strong, sweet Cuban coffee, and see my dad and mom reading the Miami Herald and the Spanish version, El Nuevo Herald, cover to cover before work. We would then talk about the issues of the day at the dinner table. Though I was born in the United States, I was keenly aware that members of my family lived in another country. My parents had come to America with nothing. They'd learned English and met in high school in Miami. My dad became a dentist, and my mom, who studied accounting, managed his practice. I had everything I needed, but our relatives in Cuba had very little. We used to send them medicine and packets of Kool-Aid. There were often food shortages under the regime, and our relatives could mix the Kool-Aid with water and have something caloric to drink. That taught me what many children of immigrants learn: don't take anything for granted. Not even something as fundamental as being able to practice your faith. My mom is from Havana, the capital, and my dad is from Baines, a small city in the east. Not long after the revolution in 1959, when Fidel Castro took over, my mom's family fled Cuba. My dad's family stuck it out in Baines for another 6 years. Castro was transforming Cuba into a one-party communist state that denounced religion. My dad remembers being taught in school that if you wanted to believe in something, you had to believe in the revolution. My grandparents pulled him out of school. They didn't want him worshiping a governmental figure, especially a communist. They wanted him and his sister to live in a country where people have freedom of religion, of speech, of press, and all the other freedoms that make the United States such a special and beautiful place. They decided to flee from Cuba. When my parents married and started a family of their own, faith was woven into our lives even more deeply than the news. I went to parochial school called Epiphany from first through sixth grade. Then from seventh to senior year, I went to Belen Jesuit, which has an interesting history. The school was founded in 1854 in Havana, Cuba. Fidel Castro himself was a graduate. In 1961, he kicked the Jesuits out of Cuba. They came to Miami and successfully reestablished the school in Little Havana. I went on to a Jesuit college, Loyola University in New Orleans. There are two mottos that the Jesuits instill in their students. One is, "Men for others." The other is, "Ad majorem de gloriam," or "For the greater glory of God." "Men for others" goes back to the Jesuit educational philosophy of creating better citizens, people who are informed so they can have better cities, better states, better countries. You're taught to think not just as an individual, but also as someone who is part of a larger group. You think of others before yourself. You do as God would do for you. "For the greater glory of God" means that in everything you are inspired by God. Whatever you do it in the profound way with your heart and mind and soul. I saw that imperative in Leah Williams, who taught public speaking and drama and coached the speech and debate team at Belen. Leo taught me how to speak in public. He devoted time after school and on weekends preparing our team for speech and debate tournaments. I developed confidence as a speaker and learned how to handle a complex subject and deliver it to an audience. Maybe God was preparing me for what He would call me to do as a career. Mom and Dad worked incredibly hard to provide for my brother and me, and they held us to the same standard. I was expected to give my best in everything I did. But one summer morning in high school, I decided to skip work. I stayed out late with my friends the night before and I was tired, so I told my mom I was going to call in sick. She gave me a look. The look. "You're not sick." "It doesn't matter if I'm there or not," I said. "I'm just an intern." "We don't do that in this house," she said. "When people give you a job, you show up." You bet I went to work that morning. When I landed the first news internship, I was only 15 and couldn't drive yet, so my mom took me to the Telemundo station every day. My parents have watched every broadcast I've ever done, from my reporting on local politics for Miami's NBC affiliate, WTBJ, to when I started anchoring Top Story and NBC Nightly News. I usually call them on my way home from work, and I'll get the lowdown on what they thought of that night's broadcast. I joke that they're my built-in Nielsen's ratings group. I want to make them proud of everything I do. The magnitude of my parents' love for me, I didn't truly understand it until Jen and I had our first child, our daughter Melina, in the spring of 2013. I felt a selfless, all-encompassing love that I hadn't known was possible. I knew I would do everything in my power to give my daughter the best life and help her become the person the Lord meant for her to be. This must have been what my parents felt, and my grandparents before them, giving up everything they knew in Cuba to come to the country where they didn't speak the language, all to give their children a chance at a better, brighter future. As the father of three children, Melena, Julia, and Tomas, I now look at the world much differently, with a deeper sense of responsibility professionally and personally. My colleagues were right. Every tough news story affects me, but anytime there's a story in which children are suffering because of a war or a natural disaster, for example, I can't help but imagine how parents in those situations feel. Jen is a former news executive producer, and so as my parents did with me and my brother, we try our best to discuss current events with our kids, including when I might be called away on assignment. This can mean missing family events like Melena's school play, Juliet's gymnastics meet, or Thomas's birthday, which happened in October 2023 and again last October, when a ceasefire agreement was reached in Gaza after 2 years of war between Israel and Hamas. Last time I was away for your birthday because of war, I told Tomas. This time it's better news. It is? Yes, because there's a chance at peace, I said. That's a big deal, and my job is to help tell people's stories. Tomas stopped crying and nodded slowly. I gave him a hug and prayed this would stick with him, the way sending medicine and Kool-Aid to relatives in Cuba had stuck with me, engendering sympathy and empathy for those in need. Sadly, I often meet people on the worst day of their lives. I've interviewed kids who've lost their parents and parents who've lost their children. Part of my job is to help tell their stories so they aren't forgotten. But I get to come home to my family. Many of the people I've interviewed don't have such a good option, and that can haunt me long after I've gone on to the next story. It's one of the reasons I go to God to pray for those I've met. I pray throughout the day. I wake up with prayer. I go to bed with prayer. I pray with my kids. I pray for the people whose stories I've told. If I can take a break, I'll read the daily devotional, Streams in the Desert. Sometimes I'll go to lunchtime mass at St. Patrick's Cathedral, right across the street from the NBC studios at 30 Rock. If I'm far away from my family covering a story, especially something that could be dangerous, I'll remind myself of one of my favorite scriptures. And he that sent me is with me. The Father hath not left me alone. Reminding myself that God's love is with me, I stay hopeful, anchored in my faith. I believe that no matter what the day brings, God is with us. Nowhere in Scripture and in any religion that I know of does it say things that are always going to be easy. Quite the opposite. But as my parents showed me, life is about facing adversity with optimism and strength, doing all that I can do for the love of others and for the greater glory of God. For more on this story, see Family Room. I'm Sandy Summers, and you're listening to Guideposts on Sun Sounds of Arizona, a 24-hour reading and information service for people who can't read print due to a disability. If you missed any part of this program, you may access it anytime on demand at www.sunsounds.org. In addition to the bi-monthly Guidepost magazine, each week we may be reading some of Guideposts' other daily devotions or inspiring stories from Guideposts Online. Empowered, the people-pleasing trap. It's something so many of us struggle with. Here are five tips for breaking free by Tara Johnson, Benton, Arkansas. She's the giving friend, the ideal wife and mom, the dedicated employee. She puts her all into any project put in front of her and volunteers to take on tasks no one else will touch. She excels at whatever she does. She's sensitive to the needs of others, goes the extra mile, and is uber organized. She meets every challenge with a smile and can-do attitude. Sounds great, right? But dig below the surface and things are more complicated. She's so used to putting other people's needs first that she neglects her own. She bends over backward to avoid conflict. She feels responsible for keeping others happy. She comes across as kind, but pushes down a resentment. She has trouble saying no, so she says yes while wondering how on earth she'll be able to handle another obligation. She craves approval and feels chained to people's expectations. Who is this woman? She's a people pleaser. I can describe her so well because I used to be her. I'm a recovering people pleaser. Some psychologists consider people pleasing an addiction. It sure felt that way when I was at my worst. Seeing someone smile and knowing that I'd won their approval was like a high that I needed to experience again. Like addicts, people pleasers feel they have no control, have a need-hate relationship with their issues, and battle hopelessness. Do you struggle with approval addiction? Is making others happy making you miserable? Here's how I broke free of the people-pleasing trap and how you can too. Admit your problem. This is like the first step in a 12-step program. Confess your feelings to God. He knows how worn out you are, how you constantly crave approval. He sees it all, but there's tremendous peace in laying your soul bare before Him. That's how healing can begin. I hit rock bottom in 2002 when I was working toward my degree in music performance. I was an overachiever. I'd finished high school early. My first semester at college, I met Todd, a senior, in his last semester. We fell in love. By the second year of college, I was married with a mortgage. I was Mrs. Responsible, Mrs. On Top of Things. Todd was the same way. Everyone at church called us the old souls. I wish I'd had the wisdom that comes with age. I was juggling classes, performances, my secretarial job in the music department, responsibilities at church. I did what I thrived on while growing up, pleasing those around me. Only it wasn't working anymore. I had no interest in my old joys, singing, playing piano, writing. I was exhausted, though I slept so much, and Todd got worried. Still, I kept saying yes to everyone who came to me with a need. Until the day my body said no. I lay on my cold bathroom floor crying into the bath mat. Finally, I admitted something that I'd never dared before. God, I'm drowning. I don't have any more to give. This isn't the victorious life you promised me. I want out. Something was obviously wrong. My doctor diagnosed me with depression and prescribed medication. I was shocked. A good Christian shouldn't need medication to lift her spirits. This is a God-given tool to ease the physical symptoms, my doctor said. Then you can focus on deeper issues. Why have you been keeping yourself so busy, for instance? The only answer I could come up with was, so people will love me. That was the beginning of my recovery. Unearth the source of your approval addiction. The weekend after my bath mat breakdown, I was supposed to host a youth event for church. I was in no shape for it. Still, I cringed at backing out on a commitment. What would people think? I confided in a friend from church. I'm so sorry. I just can't handle it right now. It's okay. Someone else will host, she said. Tara, I've been where you are. You can't keep living your life as if people mean more to you than God. Whoa. Her tone was kind, but her words stung. Because deep down, I knew she was right. Even though I was a preacher's kid, my parents didn't pressure me to act a certain way to protect my dad's ministry. But everyone else heaped praise on me when I did whatever was asked. The church needed a pianist. I took lessons. No one was willing to sing solos. I learned to do it. Tara, you're such a good helper. You sing like an angel. We don't know what we'd do without you. I got it into my head that God was happy when people were happy, and I found my worth in doing things that made people happy. As a teenager, I taught Vacation Bible School and helped our Sunday school teachers. I loved the attention that brought me. It was a total rush. It was the opposite of the kind of attention I got during my struggles with childhood epilepsy. I'll never forget the shame of those moments in elementary school when I would find 24 pairs of eyes staring at me because I'd had a seizure. I hated the helplessness of having no control over my body. If I was going to receive attention, I wanted it to be for something positive, something I chose, hence the people-pleasing. But that meant I fell for the lie that approval equals love. It took me years to realize they are not the same thing. Approval is a stamp someone gives you that says, you meet my expectations. Love says, you're a hot mess, but I'm crazy about you anyway. Approval is based on what you do. Love is based on who you are. God loves us in all our messiness and brokenness. He cares a lot more about who we are and who we've becoming than what we're doing. We have to learn to prioritize his presence over our own performance. Serving those in need is important, but examine your motives. Do you give out of love or for other reasons? Obligation, accolades, a desire to be seen, or the fear of what a refusal will bring? Learn the art of saying no. Saying no is really difficult for people pleasers. You've got to practice. Don't apologize. Don't overexplain. Keep it simple. I practiced with my close friends until I got used to it. Want to go out for coffee, Tara? No, thanks. I really need you to help out. No, I can't. Can you take care of this project? No, that isn't going to work for me. I've discovered that 99% of the time, people are okay with hearing no. Then there are those boundary pushers who get angry with you or try to guilt you into changing your mind. Remember, you're not responsible for other people's feelings. It took an extreme case for me to see that. In college, I was the president of the classical choir. The professor who was the choir director depended on me to do a lot for him. I wanted to try some jazz combo singing, but couldn't take the jazz combo class because it met at the same time as choir. One semester, I finally told my professor I was going to drop choir for jazz combo. He lost it. He stormed to the dumpster, pulled out some dead flowers, and thrust them at me, saying, "This is what I think of you right now." Can you believe that? His reaction was so patently absurd that I didn't feel guilty. In fact, it brought out my snarky side. I was the music department secretary at the time. I got out a vase, stuck the flowers in it, and put it on my desk. It was so freeing not to care what he thought anymore. Carve out space to rest. When you constantly put other people's needs first, it's easy to forget your own. But self-care isn't selfish. Look at it this way. If you've crammed your life full of doing for others, you don't have room to say yes to God, to the best he has for you. At Christmas, I think about what gift I can give to God to grow our relationship. Last Christmas, I decided to make Saturday my Sabbath. No set schedule, nothing stressful. It's my day to hang out with God. I might garden, go for a hike, play piano, whatever lets me feel closest to God. It's been so refreshing for my soul. Make time for rest. Try a weekly Sabbath for yourself. Reset as needed. You might find yourself backsliding. That's normal. It's hard to break long-held habits. Fall tends to be busy for me, and I didn't even realize I'd overcommitted myself again until my husband went into septic shock last October. He was in the hospital for weeks. One day I sat in Todd's room, the heart monitor beeping as I watched the rise and fall of his chest. He was breathing, but I felt like I was drowning. Demands pulled at me from every direction. Teaching my son's homeschool co-op, finishing a writing assignment, working with partners to establish a publishing business. Lord, how can I do everything and still be here for Todd? My phone buzzed. A text from my publishing partners who wanted me to look over our budget. Are you kidding me? My husband almost died and they want me to go over numbers? The absurdity of the request. I can't be all things to all people, I thought. Thank you, Lord, for reminding me. I texted my reply. No, can't do it. I asked other homeschool parents to cover for me. I got an extension on the writing assignment. Then I took Todd's hand in mine, aligning my breathing with his. Check in with yourself regularly. If you notice you're falling back into your old patterns, pause. Hit reset. Like so many things that are worthwhile in life, recovery from people-pleasing is about progress, not perfection. For more on this story, see Family Room. Everyday Blessings, The Words We Keep by Sabra Ciancanelli, editor. A few times a month, my friend and I walk the big loop of our neighborhood in New York's Hudson Valley, talking our way through whatever's on our minds. That morning, as we passed front porches still cluttered with winter's debris and gardens just beginning to show their first green shoots, I asked her how her mom was doing. Her dementia is getting worse, my friend said. She has only three phrases left that she can say, just three. What are they? I asked. She paused and looked at me. I love you. You're so beautiful. I'm okay. I'm okay. I'm okay. We walked in silence for the next few minutes, the sound of our footsteps filling the space between us. I took in the weight of her words and tried to imagine how hard it must be to witness her mom's decline. I'm so sorry you're going through this, I said. At least the words she's left with are all so positive. Even as I said it, I felt how strange it was to be grateful in the face of such devastating illness, one that steals our memories and language. Yes, my friend said, Mom hardly ever gave a compliment all these years, but thankfully I hear one now every time I see her, almost as if she's making up for it. Of everything she says, I hope she really is okay. I hope she means it. We finished the loop of our neighborhood and returned home, but I kept thinking about what my friend had said. I've thought a lot about language since then, the phrases we repeat, the ones we reach for when we want to comfort or compliment someone, the words that rise when everything else grows quiet. I wonder what might remain if my own language someday narrowed. If I had only three phrases left, what would I want them to be? The more I think about it, the more I realize her mom's three phrases are perfect. I love you. You're so beautiful. I'm okay. That's all the time we have today for Guideposts. Thank you for listening. My name is Sandy Summers. Stay tuned for more great programming on Sun Sounds.